The Rebel Capitalist Show, Episode 23. Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Hello, everyone. How are we doing today? The website, I'm trying to drive people to that email. So if you haven't subscribed to that, make sure that you do. That's at my website, which is georgegammon.com. The benefit to you is that I email you each new video directly, and I also give some commentary that is exclusive to the subscriber list. It doesn't go on the YouTube channel. And in the future, we'll be doing certain content and videos that will be exclusive for the people on that list. They will not be on the YouTube channel. So you want to make sure that you subscribe to that as soon as we get done with the live stream, georgegammon.com, and it'll just pop right up. It's super easy. I've got some really exciting news. And I get people asking me all the time, George, where should I invest in stocks that pay dividends, like an investment outside of the United States? Or where can I get gold? Or what gold miners should I buy? Or where should I store gold? And honestly, one of the things that served me well in business is I learned quickly that you've got to know what you don't know. And you, a jack of all trades is a master of none. And what I do know well is real estate and macro. I know that very well. But what I don't know is this kind of a bottoms up approach to stock picking and trying to determine, whose balance sheet's great, and especially with these gold miners. I mean, that is complex stuff. And I don't know that well enough to advise you to buy XYZ. So what I'm doing for my own money is I'm starting to study this, and I subscribe to a couple newsletters just to help me invest my own money, not only the investment side of my portfolio, but also that speculative side. As you guys know, that's much different. And I just subscribed to Katusa Research, which is Marin Katusa. I'm sure most of you have heard of him. And so I'm going to dive into that newsletter this week and just try to, I haven't really even got the chance or the time to go into it, but I'm going to do that this week. And anything that I invest in, I'll let you guys know, and I'll just kind of disclose everything, and you guys can kind of follow along on the journey. And I'll probably put up my actual portfolio on my website so you guys can follow that in real time as well. But I thought that would be cool for everyone. And so just kind of heads up there. All right, let's get into the live or the super chats so I don't get too far behind. Electrical Austin. Thank you, Electrical Austin. He asks, Peter Schiff says gold will eventually return to being monetized, as in backing money. What do you think the possibility of gold standard return? I think that there's a decent probability of that. I mean, if I just had to spitball it, I'd say probably 25%, because eventually, when we have a currency crisis, a global currency crisis, and that's in the major currencies like the dollar, like the yen, like the euro, people are going to lose confidence, I think, in fiat currency. You know, people always kind of say, oh, that's tinfoil hat stuff, that's nonsense. They don't realize that this fiat currency thing that we've been toying around with, that's very, very new in history. When you look at the monetary history of the world, I mean, you can go back 5,000 years, and we've only been doing this fiat currency stuff for, what, call it the 40, 50 years. So in the grand scheme of things, that's a very, very short time frame. So I don't think it's ridiculous to think that we could go back to that. On the flip side of that, I can see why we wouldn't, because central banks and governments, it takes away a lot of their power depending on how strict that gold standard is. But I think they may come to a point where they're forced into it. And regardless of whether or not they want to, the market forces it upon them. So, you know, a lot of people look at this as like a binary question. Either it's a yes, they're going to do it, or no, there's not going to, there's no way. And I don't really look at things in a, very few things do I look at in a binary fashion. I always think that it's, there's various shades of gray, and you've got to analyze, okay, well, there's not a 100% probability and there's not a 0% probability. So where is it there on the spectrum? And if I had to guess, I'd say, you know, 25% yes, probably 75% no. Tyler, thank you for the super chat. Do you spend more time finding value add properties, or do you like turnkey style rentals? It depends for whom, Tyler. For people like my sister, who just really doesn't know anything about, well, I shouldn't say that, doesn't know a lot about it, you're going to want to do a turnkey property. I don't really suggest hiring a crew and getting in there unless you can find someone like Christina, who I've got in Kansas City, who her son kind of, if she has got an investor that buys a property that needs a little bit, not too much, but just little cosmetic stuff, her son kind of manages that for investors that are located outside of Kansas City. If you've got a setup like that, maybe. But again, if it's just cosmetic, if you're just doing paint, carpet, maybe some tile here and there, but a full-on remodel, you're going to want to know what you're doing. So if you do know what you're doing, then I absolutely suggest that, because that's, you're going to make your money on the, well, I'm not going to say that. If you're looking at just the equity, you're going to make money on the buy side. Actually, you know what? I take that back, because even if you're buying for cash flow, you're making money on the buy side as well. It's just, you've got to look at it from two completely different angles. And I try to differentiate between the two, because so many people say, George, well, there's a big bubble in real estate, so how on earth can you suggest buying real estate? And for most of you, you know that it's because I like these linear markets where they're in less of a bubble, let's call it that, where your downside's a lot lower, and you're just going into these starter homes where your downside is even lower, and then you're going into good neighborhoods and whatnot. But the problem with that is people are looking at it the wrong way. Because you're not, if you go in and buy a cash flowing rental property right now, you shouldn't be buying it because you hope that the value goes up. Or you shouldn't not be buying it because you think the value goes down. You're not buying the value of the house. That's not where your rationale for the purchase starts. Your rationale for the purchase should start with cash flow. You're buying a stream of income. So as long as that stream of income doesn't change, then who cares what the price does? Also, you're buying cheap debt. So you're buying a 30-year fixed rate mortgage, which let's call it 4-5%. Historically, that is dirt cheap. So that's where you're getting the values. You're getting the value on the debt and the cash flow, not necessarily the asset itself. So I know it's kind of hard to compartmentalize that, but I really want to encourage you guys to try to do that if you can. Okay, Mr. Lev C, thank you very much for the super chat. It says, working at Microsoft, and I'm thinking moving from UK London to Seattle for 3 years for career growth. Awesome, man. Sounds like you got a great gig. Congratulations. Double the income plus lower tax rate. Fantastic. Would you advise, given the USD drop, civil unrest versus exit? Oh, yeah. Absolutely, 100%. I mean, on my videos, I really talk about things that should make people aware of the risks in the system. But when you're talking about doubling your income by going from the UK to the United States, I mean, that's a no-brainer. Especially when you can take your excess income that you're not spending, and you don't have to keep it in dollars. I mean, you can put it in whatever vehicle you want to try to maintain that purchasing power. I mean, if you've got more confidence in the pound, just have a multi-currency account and just wire the excess dollars into your account, and you know, turn them into pounds if that's what you want, because long term you figure that your expenses are going to be denominated in pounds. But whenever you're talking about doubling your income, man, go for it. I would totally go for it. Evolve23, thank you for the super chat. Do you recommend a fourplex for a beginner real estate investor? I plan on purchasing a fourplex, then single family home with 60K down. Oh, could you compare the two? Okay, I think I understand your question. First of all, I 100% would recommend a fourplex for a beginner real estate investor, especially if you're living in it, because boy, you're going to get a baptism by fire and you don't have too much downside because you're living there. And so you're able to save what you would have spent otherwise in your living expenses and or your housing expenses, excuse me. And if you buy right, then you're going to have your tenants paying off your mortgage and all your expenses. So what a great way to learn real estate. Plus, you're right on top of it, so you can micromanage the hell out of the tenants and the property itself because you're there every day. I think that's a perfect opportunity to get in the game. Then comparing the fourplex to a single family home, the big difference is your type of tenant, assuming that the neighborhoods are similar and that your tenant for a multifamily, whether it's a fourplex or even kind of down the totem pole when you get like the apartments, is going to be a lower quality. That's not to say that they're going to be bad, but it's just on average, they're going to be lower quality than someone that you would have in a single family home. So it kind of starts at a single family home, goes down to like a fourplex or a duplex, and then goes down to an apartment. Just much different type of tenant. Also, on the liquidity side, you're going to have a lot more liquidity in case you wanted to sell for the single family home, because the single family home has two buyers. You've got an investor buyer, and then you have an owner occupant. So that's probably the thing I like most about the single family homes, is they offer you that additional level of liquidity. Eric, thank you for the super chat, asks, do you have thoughts on crowdfunded real estate like Realty Mogul Fund Rise? I found a few that invest mostly in the Midwest and South I'm considering, since I'm not ready to buy rentals yet. Eric, I don't know enough about them to give you a yay or nay. I do know that in investing in general, I like to be in control of my investments as much as possible, and especially with real estate. It's just such a hard game when you've got these big pools of money that are trying to buy residential and trying to manage them across states and in different cities, and that is tough, man. That is really, really tough to do it well. I've yet to see someone or entity that can really pull it off. It's a much different story when you as an individual own, let's say, 10 rental properties in like two or three different markets, and you've got one property manager in each market that you really trust. That's a big difference than a fund or a pool going in and buying 3,000 rental properties in 15 different states and then trying to set up a property management company in-house with these private equity guys that don't know the first thing about changing out a hot water heater or trying to collect rent from a tenant or evicting a tenant. But I guess your question is more if you've got the choice of doing nothing or doing that, maybe. But I you know what I'd do is I'd really hold off, and I'm going to do my best to try to find some really good dividend paying stocks. Obviously not in the United States, but maybe in elsewhere, and buy it for myself. So my point is, if I could get a 6% dividend paying stock outside the United States that was trading at a, let's say, a 12 PE or something, and it was just like that that Cypress stock. I don't know if you guys saw the video on Friday where I talk about Doug Casey and the asymmetry that he uses in his portfolio to make sure that the odds are in his favor and he's winning in the long term. I was fortunate enough to do that in 2013-14 in Cyprus, where I bought a hotel chain that at the time was offering a 10% dividend because the stock was so cheap. And now I've made the stock's gone from like, you know, 14 cents or whatever it was when I bought it up to 88 cents, and they've increased their dividend to the point where now I'm getting like a 20% dividend yield based on my cost basis, of course. So my point is, if you could get something like that, I would rather have that than go into like a realty mogul or fund rise. But what I'd prefer the most is to have a nice cash flowing property that that I owned outright in a linear market. And you guys know the rest of the story. All right, Farrell, thank you for the super chat. As a world traveler, do you store gold in a vault and pay a fee? Worth it? And concern about access if system collapse? I don't store in a vault. I've got a place where I store it. I won't go into that. That could change in the future. And if it does, I will definitely let you guys know what I'm doing myself. So if you want to go ahead and do the same thing, you're more than welcome. But I like the idea of diversifying where you have your gold, especially if you've got a lot of it. I mean, if you've got like $5,000 or whatever, I personally don't think that's worth storing. And again, it's to each their own, but I would rather just bury that in my backyard. But if you got $500,000, might be a little different story. But I like the diversification within your political risk. So even if you've got a system collapse, or if you've got the U.S. coming in and confiscating gold like they have done in the past, you've got some hedges there. Any concern about access in a system collapse? I don't know if your question is regarding confiscation, because I would have concern about that in a system collapse in different jurisdictions, because we know the U.K., the United States, and Australia has all done that in the past. So in individual locations, I would be concerned, but as far as all the countries doing a bail-in on your gold, if you've got your gold spread out through four or five jurisdictions, I think the probability of that is extremely low. Okay, range 2300, something like that. It says, hi, thank you for the super chat, by the way. Hi, George. Hello from Israel and Croatia. Wow, cool places. I think we've got a typo here. I'm guessing you're saying since pensions, maybe, are a big Ponzi scheme, would you suggest taking out of the pension if the penalty is a 35% tax? What would you invest in with 100K USD? I can tell you what I would do personally, but that doesn't mean that it's right for you. What I would do personally is I would take it out of the pension and I would just eat the tax, and then I'd flip a property. I'd buy a property and I'd remodel it. So I had some forced appreciation because I'm going to make 35% in the equity build from the remodel. But the caveat to that is I know what I'm doing in real estate. So if you weren't a real estate professional, you know, would I advise that? I'm not sure. And it depends on the real estate opportunities in your area, which I know Croatia, I actually put an offer on a couple places in Split, which I'm sure you're familiar with, right down kind of to the, well, when you're at the water, if you're looking at Old Town on the left up the hill, I'm sure you're familiar with that area, but I don't know it that well. So I'm hesitant to give you a definitive answer on this one because I don't know your situation. I don't know what type of investments that you have access to. I guess how I'd answer the question to the best of my ability would be, if you have an asset that you can go into that would pay you to own it, and pay you, let's say, 10% per annum to own it, then in 2 or 3 years, you're getting your money back, and then you're out of the pension. You've got 100% of the equity that you had. And now from that point moving on, all that cash flow is a gain. If you had access to something like that, I would probably do it, because to your point, having it in a pension is, boy, especially if you're in Europe with negative interest rates. Oh man, that's not a good situation for pensions, let me tell you. All right, Daniel, thank you for the super chat. Asks, how important is credit score for business success? Roughly zero. Roughly zero of importance, Daniel. It's just not at all. It can be important for real estate investing. If you haven't established a relationship with a bank, like a local bank, then yeah, it can be. But as far as business success, I mean, nothing. I mean, my credit score when I started my first business, my first successful business, was, I don't know, it wasn't very good. So the way I started my first successful, well, I always speak in broad terms, as you guys know. Let me be specific here. The first business that I started that did extremely well, that I needed a lot of capital to start, I got that capital from an investor that could care less what my credit score was, because he knew that I could make him a ton of money. And he didn't care what the credit score was looked like, because I did consulting work for him prior to that, and I made him a couple million bucks. So that's going to do a lot more for you than your credit score, is you proving to the marketplace that you've got the skills to make it happen. So I'd be far more concerned with your ability to manage people and to solve problems than I would about your credit score. Hey, Chin Yao, thank you very much for the super chat, my friend. Asks, thanks for all the nice videos. You're very welcome. I recently found investing in gold royalty companies may be a great way to play gold. Yeah, what's your take on this? Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I'm really excited to dive into Marin Katus's newsletter, because from what I understand, he really does that well. I listened to a podcast that Marin did with my buddy Eric Townsend the other day, and they talked about how gold had gone up a certain percentage in the last year, and Marin, his fund, or you know, his newsletter subscribers, had made like a 90% gain, and it's because they're going into not just pure plays on gold, but they're going into royalties and warrants and doing all these other things that might be more in line with a sophisticated investor or someone like me who isn't very sophisticated from the bottoms up approach, but has access to information from someone that you trust to maybe get involved with those types of deals. So bottom line is, yes, I think that could be a great way. But again, that's not insurance. Let me be clear, guys. That's not insurance. That's for the part of your portfolio that you are allocating to speculation. Unless, of course, you can get a play on gold that pays you a dividend, or actually pays you, then I would consider that an investment. Hey, Archie, thank you for the super chat. Says, wage slave here with decent amount of savings, okay? Should I focus on investing in a rental property or investing in an e-commerce business? Boy, I don't know if I can answer that question. Now, starting an e-commerce business. I mean, it depends on how good you are at e-commerce. If you're, Archie, if let's say you're a waged employee for an e-commerce business, and you've been doing that, and you know that business like the back of your hand because you've been doing it for 5 years, I mean, no brainer. go into an e-commerce business. You got to first and foremost start with what you know. And again, going back to that business that I was talking about earlier, where I had an investor, I put in a lot of my own money too, but I had an investor help me out. And, would it have been better for me to invest in rental property back then or a business that I knew like the back of my hand? I mean, business that I know like the back of my hand and then take all the profits from the business and invest in real estate. That's the way you do it. But my point, Archie, is I don't know your skill set and I don't know what you have experience in. So if you think that you've got more experience and your strengths and weaknesses would be better in an environment where you've got a rental property, then by all means do that. But if you think it would be better in an e-commerce business, then go for it. I can tell you right now that two things that you're going to have, regardless of what you do, you're going to have the ability to manage people. And as you guys know, like I always say, the ability to manage people and solve problems. So you got to work on those two things first if you don't have those skills refined. Alan asks, whole world has been talking about dollar collapse, okay? But instead the euro, I'm guessing you're saying the euro is slowly collapsing. Why? And what's going on with Deutsche Bank? They went near bankrupts to FOMO. I don't know if it's FOMO, buddy. I think it's more just the central banks pumping in a ton of liquidity and that liquidity just needing a place to call home. As far as the dollar collapse, but instead the euro, the bottom line is they're all collapsing, Alan. That's one thing that all fiat currencies have in common throughout history is they go to their intrinsic value, right? They go to zero. And if you look at the dollar cents or monetary mandarins, as Jim Grant calls them at the Federal Reserve, came into existence in 1913. You look at the value of the dollar and it's gone down by about 98%. So we've had 2000% inflation since that time. I mean, I would consider that a dollar collapse. I think the dollar's already collapsed. But the euro, they're all tied to one another. So it's not necessarily about the dollar collapsing relative to the euro or the euro collapsing relative to the dollar. It's all fiat currencies collapsing relative to everything else. Hard assets is what I'm referring to, and consumer goods. So I honestly think they're all going down. Now, whether they go straight down, that's a whole different topic. I think there's some really smart guys out there who are a hell of a lot smarter than I am that see it going up first, such as Brent Johnson. I mean, he's probably got the most notable theory on that, his dollar milkshake theory, and it makes a lot of sense. So could the DXY go up to 110, 120 before we have a collapse and it loses 50% of its value? Sure, absolutely. But in the end, it's they're all going to the same place. Okay, M. Blecken says, is Bitcoin a part of your portfolio? It's not part of mine, but I think it's very interesting as a speculation. I think I would consider it. Let me put it to you this way. I've got a lot of money tied up right now in real estate, as most of you guys know. But a lot of that money is going to be freed up because a couple of really big projects that I'm working on in Medellin are going to be going up on the market here in about a month or two. So I'll most likely take a good portion of the proceeds from those sales and I'll invest it back into real estate. But I'll take a lot of that out and start moving that money into more speculative plays because I don't have 10% of my portfolio right now in speculative assets, which is what I suggest to all of you. So obviously I'm suggesting that to you because that's what I like to do myself. So could Bitcoin be a part of my future? here in the next few months, 100%. It 100% could. But I tell you what, Paul, or for any of you watching, if I buy Bitcoin, I will let everyone know. And in fact, it goes back to what I was saying at the beginning of the video. And another reason why I'd suggest signing up for my email list on georgegammon.com is because if I can figure out from a technical standpoint how to put my personal portfolio up on the website so all you guys can see what I'm buying and I'll put why I'm buying it or why I'm selling it, or I'm going to put that up on my website and give you guys access. Whomever's on that email list, you're going to have access to all that stuff free. Hard Facts asks, what is your current analysis of the coronavirus and its impact on the world economy? Oh, you know what? I'm sorry, guys. I just remembered that every time I say that word in one of my videos, the C word, we'll call it, YouTube demonetizes my darn video. So that's one thing I was going to do is I was going to make it a point to call it something else. Like it's weird. Everything seems to be based around something Spanish. You got the Spanish flu, the coronavirus. Maybe we call it we had the tequila crisis. Maybe we need some sort of what is another Spanish drink? Maybe we could call it the Modelo cold or Modelo cold. I don't know. But anyway, I don't want to go off on a tangent here. But so let's address the question because this is a fantastic question. I think that the coronavirus is a lot worse than the media is telling us and the World Health Organization or WHO. It's just if you look at all the anecdotal evidence on Twitter and from really smart people, this isn't coming from people that would normally be considered conspiracy guys or gals. This is coming from mainstream people that are out there on financial Twitter, FinTwit or whatever they call it. It's just, that doesn't mean that I don't think it can be contained. And it doesn't mean that I think that the United States is going to be in a situation where they're shutting down Chicago and New York and LA and Dallas like they're having to do in China. But it's a possibility. And it's something that I think we should all be paying close attention to. And I can't do it any better than Dr. Chris Martinson. So if you guys haven't looked at his YouTube channel, make sure that you do that. It's peakprosperity.com. He's doing like daily updates. And I think that's a great place to get information. It's not sensational. It's just the facts. It is what it is. Here you go. And as far as its impact on the world economy, I think it's a great point because even people that are now starting to say, okay, well, I guess it's a little worse than the flu. And okay, I admit it is a little worse than SARS. Even these people in the mainstream media or that are more, let's call it American-centric, they're saying, well, yeah, it's bad, but it's not going to be bad in the United States. We don't have to worry about it because X, Y, or Z reason. But what they're not telling you and what they're not acknowledging is it used to be when the United States sneezes, the world gets a cold. I'm sure you guys have all heard of that that saying. Now that China can sneeze and the U.S. can get a really bad cold. And I don't think this has to be an issue that expands outside of the borders of China to be a serious issue from an economic standpoint. And someone talked about supply chains in here. Paul asked about supply chains, and that is a fantastic point. I mean, what happens? Think about all of the stuff that's made in China. When everyone thinks about it, just right off the top of their head, they just think, okay, yeah, I get it, George. Walmart, Target, little cheap plastic stuff. Yeah, I get it. But what they forget is that a lot of the parts that go into that car you're driving, that's China. A lot of the parts that go into your cell phone, that's China. it gets really bad if those supply chains are cut off. I was doing a video with another person in the space, another expert, the other day, and she made the point about how a lot of the parts that we use for our electrical grid in the United States are made in China. So if we do have an issue, and I'm not saying that we're going to have an electrical grid issue, but if we did, then where are you now sourcing those parts? I don't think that's something that could just be, you know, the snap of your fingers can be made in Mexico all of a sudden, or can be made in the United States. Definitely can't be made in the United States at the same price. These things take time. It takes years to set up the factories required for a lot of these components. Now, granted, if you're just buying a sweater, yes, that's something that can move from China down to, call it Vietnam or Mexico or something, very easily. But most likely the price would still go up, because if the prices were the same or less to get things made in Mexico, well, the things would be made in Mexico. It wouldn't be made in China. So again, my point is we really need to start thinking about, even if it doesn't get outside of China, if it gets really bad in China, how does that affect the world economy? And for those of you in the United States, how does that affect the US economy? Because it definitely, definitely does. I think the most obvious side effect would be putting inflationary pressures on consumer prices in the US, because those supply chains have to move elsewhere, and that doesn't come without cost. And generally, the consumer is going to have to absorb that cost. Hey, Evolve, thank you for the super chat. Investing in real estate, long-term cash flow, and fund in early retirement. Yes, yes, yes. Is it decent plan to pay off the loans early, say 20-year versus 30-year mortgage? I don't see why you would do that. It's going to give you more positive cash flow. And a 30-year, as long as it's fixed, Evolve, let me be clear, as long as it's a fixed rate mortgage, it gives you more leverage on shorting the dollar. And that's one of the main reasons we want to own 30-year fixed rate debt, is because it gives you a way to be paid, because you're getting positive cash flow from that rental property. So you're being paid to short the dollar, because as the dollar loses value, you're paying back that loan with cheaper devalued dollars. So that is a transfer of purchasing power from the lender to the borrower, which would be you. So is it a decent plan to pay them off early? No, that is not a decent plan. That, in my opinion, that's a bad plan. I would want as much 30-year fixed rate debt as I could get, assuming that you've got the income and the ratios all work out. You got to have positive cash flow. Let me preface with that. And you got to have the rainy day fund and all that stuff set up. But assuming you do, and from an income or cash flow standpoint, it makes sense, then I really like that 30-year fixed rate mortgage. Okay, Range asks another question. This was the person from Israel and Croatia, maybe go back and forth. Croatia, would you say houses prices in a bubble? See, I, especially in a good district in, okay, let me walk through this here for everyone else. I own an apartment in a good district in a Croatian town, four hours north of Split. And just for those of you who've never been to Croatia, Split is one of the huge, huge tourist places on the water, on the ocean there, or the sea, which is just gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. If you guys get a chance to go on one of those like cruises that goes through Croatia and Montenegro, you've got to do it. And Split is one of my favorite places. It's got the Emperor Diocles. I hope I'm saying that right. Range, you can tell me if I'm not saying that right. But a Roman emperor has his old castle and town right around there. But anyway, okay, so 4 hours north of a tourist town, you paid 90,000 euros for it, and it's giving you 300 euros a month. Should I sell and buy a different one? Yes, I would sell and buy a different one, because that RV ratio is no good. It's for a $90,000 property, or I'm sorry, 90,000 euro property, you would want, ideally, you'd want to be collecting at least 900 euros a month in rent to have that 1% RV ratio that we look for. So yeah, I would look for another opportunity. Daniel, thank you for the super chat. With Mega, Apple, etc., buying own stock, Fed printing, asset expensive, hold cash, metals overinflated assets, i.e. property. Yeah. Can there be a silver standard? It's a possibility, but I don't know that that would be better than a gold standard because of the supply side of silver. The supply side of silver is, according from what I've learned from Rick and from Doug, Rick Roll and Doug Casey, the supply side of silver is a lot less predictable than gold, because silver is not always mined in just a silver mine. A lot of time it's a byproduct of other things that are being mined. So probably it'd be better. Also, from a confidence standpoint, you got to remember, Daniel, if we go to an asset-backed currency or a commodity-based currency, if you want to call it that, it's going to be because confidence in the system is done. I mean, we are in like Venezuela mode, where everyone's just throwing up their hands saying, this does not work. We want something else. Forget this fiat currency. We never want to deal with a fiat currency again for the rest of our lives. If they're in that type of mindset, they're going to want the most stable, historically proven commodity out there. And to me, that's gold. But not to say that it's not impossible. I think it's just a lot less probable than a gold standard. Tommy boy, hey, buddy. Good to see you again on the chats. How's that Corvette going, buddy? Did you convince your wife to let you buy that thing? I hope not. I think she would really hopefully set you straight on that. All right. What happens to all this newly printed Fed money when Wall Street corporate loans collapse? In a fiat monetary system, shouldn't this money be destroyed in theory by the banks? Yeah, you've got a push-pull there, Tommy, because to your point, when they default on loans or if they're paid back, then that is reducing the supply of money. But since the Fed's ability to print money is unlimited, they can simply create a lot more money than is destroyed. And as far as the corporate debt, I mean, that is in such a bubble, and you've got so much corporate debt that's just teetering right on the edge of investment grade and junk, right at that triple B. And you know as well as I do, if they get downgraded, that's going to get really ugly really fast. That is stiff drink time right there. That is proper stiff drink time. And I mean, that just has so many knock-on effects that it's just that's a hour-long video in and of itself. Archie, thank you for the super chat. What are some books, sources of info wisdom you recommend that can help one become economically anti-fragile? Yeah, good word. Able to prosper no matter the circumstance. You know, I always think of these books when I'm not doing these live streams. I say, oh shoot, I should have written that one down. I actually want to add that to the website, like a books that I suggest. So another reason for you guys to subscribe to the newsletter or to the email list, because maybe we'll email that to everyone. But first and foremost is Beat the Dealer by Ed Thorpe. And that's a blackjack book. And if any of you watched the Tesla video that I did on Wednesday, you'll know exactly why I'm saying that. That really wasn't a Tesla video, as most of you know. That was my best investing advice packaged as a Tesla video. But my point with that is that the principles of blackjack are all about probabilities. And the more that you understand why probabilities matter, then the better you're going to be in not only business, but especially in investing. So I'd start there. I'd go to Thomas Sowell, Basic Economics. I would also read all of the Market Wizards books by Jack Schwager. And not that, you know, you want to get into trading. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But it's just understanding those, the mindset of all these guys and gals that have done so well over the years in the stock market, from Jim Rogers to Druckenmiller to Ed Thorpe to Dalio, and just learning from the masters. And just Schwager asks such good questions, and you, it's just a, it's an invaluable resource to really get your mind thinking about investments in the right way. So I'd start with those. And as far as other resources outside of my YouTube channel, you got to go to Real Vision. You have to. And I think it's $180 a year, which is just a ridiculous bargain. If you can't do that right now, no problem. They've got a YouTube channel where all their content is free. I actually think they have a lot of free content on their website. That would be my video source. And for a podcast, Macro Voices. You've got to listen to Macro Voices. I mean, it's like mandatory listening for someone who wants to be in the know about what's going on with global macro right now. So that's where I'd start. And as far as more references and books, just make sure that you're checking out the website or getting on that email list. Okay, Cliff, thank you for the super chat. Says, hey, George, do you still play blackjack for fun? Oh, there we go. If so, what are the game conditions in Colombia? I don't know what they're in Colombia. My guess is they're not very favorable because so few people know the game here that I think the casinos could pretty much change the rules. And you know the rules I'm talking about that gives them the edge almost regardless of what you're doing. But no, I don't really play for fun. Because the only reason I played blackjack is it was a way to train my mind. It wasn't something that I did for fun or even to make money. It was to train myself to think in a way. And so I would literally go to a casino for 8 hours straight, and I would only bet like $5 hands. And I would do that because I knew that if I was playing well and playing correctly, that I could stay there quite a long time with, usually you start with 30 units. And I would do that, and not to make money, I just didn't care. I just wanted to play correctly. And I would try, and the you say, well, George, how hard is it to train your mind? Well, the training comes in when you're down and you know you're down, but then your mind starts playing tricks on you, that you're like, well, is this working? Is it not working? Maybe this theory doesn't work. Maybe the book wasn't right. Maybe the probabilities aren't correct. And then you start getting into the mode where you're like, well, shoot, the last time I did this, it didn't, maybe the last time I hit on this number, it didn't work. And your mind just starts playing tricks on you. And you got to get that out of your head, and you've got to reprogram yourself to not worry about whether or not you're making money. That doesn't matter. That is totally irrelevant. The only thing that matters is that you are playing correctly. Why do I say that? Because if you play correctly in the long run, you're going to win because the probabilities are on your side. And it that transfers to business. And that's where I used it first, because when you get into a business that, let's say, has a sales and marketing funnel, and that let's say you spend $1,000 on leads and none of those leads pan out, but you know that through your research that if you continue to do it, then just over the long term, it will pan out. And it gives you the confidence to know, okay, although I spent $1,000 and it didn't pan out, I know that if I spend $10,000, it is. If I spend $100,000, it's going to work out even more, meaning that the odds, you get the law of large numbers are in your favor. So the more you spend, the higher the probability that you're actually going to turn a profit. And I know that just sounds crazy, but that's one of the big mind shifts that took me from making a little bit of money to making a lot of money. And so, and that's so counterintuitive, you know, for people to think, well, I've got a better chance of making money if I drop $100,000 than I do if I drop $1,000. But it's the number of bets you make, right? So anyway, if you go back to that, I'm going off on a tangent here, but if you go back to that video on Wednesday, that'll outline it. And my main point here is that, no, I don't play for fun, but if I ever get into the point where I feel as though I'm forgetting the importance of that, I do go back and play blackjack just to remind myself. But I'd probably go to Puerto Rico. I like the tables there a little bit better. Not that they're in your favor, but I just like playing there a little bit. Okay, Robbie, thanks for the super chat. I live in Southeast Florida. I own a small condo. It's paid for and I'm debt-free. Congratulations, Robbie. Awesome. Family has outgrown it and we want to buy a house. Okay, I'm saving what cash I can for the down payment, but my income fluctuates a lot due to commissions. When can I expect a large dip to get in? Ah, buddy, you just can't time these things. You really can't. I wish I could give you an answer, but if I did, I'd be lying to you. All I can say is that it's expense. That's the only thing you can do, is you can only determine if an asset is expensive or if it's cheap. You can't really determine if it's going up or down in value. I wish I could give you some, trying to think out loud here to see if I could maybe give you some advice. I don't know if maybe you could try to house hack. Your significant other probably wouldn't like that too much. Plus, if you got a family, that probably wouldn't pan out. But if it was just on paper, that was probably what I would do, is I would look for like a triplex, because then if you're worried about having that steady money coming in, it sounds like you got a sales gig, then you wouldn't have to worry about that because your tenants are paying your mortgage. So if you have a couple down months in commission, then it's no problem. If that were a possibility with your family and with your significant other, I would explore that first and foremost. Trevor, thank you for the super chat. Asks, Australia changing the term deposits to allow for bail-ins with others, and imposing $10,000 cash purchase limit, what effect on gold, silver future? You can see this just coming down the pipeline everywhere. It's just really unfortunate, but it's the sign of the times. It's amazing, as people call us tinfoil hatters, or whatever they call us, and they just completely ignore this stuff. Like, I don't know how you can not be concerned with that, but that's going off in a tangent. So I definitely think that will put upward pressure. That's definitely a tailwind for gold and silver. Now, if that's going to dramatically affect the price, I don't know, because Australia, there's 20 million people there roughly. And I don't know if enough of the population are going to go into gold and silver to move the price, or Bitcoin for that matter. I want to throw in Bitcoin, because that's definitely something that we've seen people do in the past, like in Venezuela, when they have problems. I mean, we definitely have to acknowledge that people are going into crypto. So we don't want to ignore that from a speculation. But I don't know that there would be that much enough tailwind to move the price, I think is what I'm saying. But if this happens, which I think it will, on a global level, just at different times, I don't think it's all going to happen at once. But if we have this type of situation where it starts in Australia, then a year later it's in the Eurozone, then 2 years later it's in the state, you know, then it's most likely not going to be bad for the price of gold and silver. That's for sure. Or Bitcoin. Gareth, thank you for the super chat. Says gold reaching 50 grand is a little apocalyptic for me. Okay. But there's a lot of people talking about 5, 10, 25. What is the probability of such numbers? Well, first and foremost, Garrett, I'd suggest going back to that Jim Rickards video that I did, because whether you're looking at gold at 10,000 an ounce or 50,000 an ounce really isn't any more apocalyptic. It's just a matter of what type of gold standard you want, right? So, and again, we want to compartmentalize here, because gold can go up if we go onto a gold standard, or it can go up because we get a lot of inflation or a lot of we have a black swan event, or people lose confidence in the system and then they go into gold. So gold could go up to 5, 10, whatever, without being without the United States or any other country, or the world for that matter, going to a gold standard. But my point with the 50 grand is, if you go to, let's call it a, I can't remember what the exact numbers were, but call it a 20% gold standard, where the amount of currency, the gold backing, it has to be 20% basically of the money supply, then you're, let's call it at 10 grand, just throwing out a number. But if you want 100% gold backing, then that's what takes you to 50 grand. So it's no more apocalyptic. It's just a different type of gold standard. So the probabilities of such numbers, it's timing, Gareth, in all honesty, it's timing. If you say, what's the probability of $5,000 gold tomorrow? Very low. What's the probability of $5,000 gold in 5 years? A hell of a lot higher. What's the probability in 15 years? I'd give it 90%, if not more, if I'm just right off the top of my head. So it's just a matter of time. And I think that's not to say at $5,000, it will have more purchasing power, because it could go up just as an inflation hedge. So it could just go up in nominal terms. There's a lot of moving parts, Gareth. But I think it starts with that. It starts with compartmentalizing, whether you're talking about gold going up as a result of going on a gold standard, or a result of people just buying more gold due to an inflation hedge or a loss of confidence in the system. And then it's about asking yourself what you think the time frame will be, and then adjusting your portfolio accordingly. Argonautics did a super chat. Thank you very much. George, do you consider REITs, or dividend-paying stocks, and investment? Yes, I do. I assume that one does the research. Oh, I assume that one does the research. Yes, exactly. Analysis beforehand. Absolutely. I like owning real estate myself better than REITs. But if you can find some dividend-paying stocks, and again, there's pros and cons. Jason, and I'm sure I'll do a video with him on this, and we'll talk about this specifically in greater detail. But one of the huge benefits to real estate is you can use leverage, and you can short the dollar with that. You can't use much leverage with dividend paying stocks. And but there's pros and cons. So I'll save that for my discussion with Jason. But if you can find a cheap dividend paying stock that's giving you a good return and a great yield, then absolutely that's an investment, because you're buying the cash flow stream. You're not buying the price going up. Again, I always use the example of Coca-Cola back in 2009, going to, I think it got down to like $19.55 a share. If I could buy Coca-Cola at $19.55 a share at a 6%, or that would be like an 8% dividend yield now. Oh my gosh. I would do that all day long. And I wouldn't do it with my entire portfolio, but I definitely would do that with a portion. Now, would I care if Coca-Cola goes down to $10, $5? No, I could care less. It's like I couldn't care if it goes up to $50. Who cares? Because I'm just collecting that income stream, and I'm doing it with a company that most likely, on a moving forward basis, will be increasing the size of that dividend. So although I may be making 5 or 6% now, if they're going to continually increase that dividend based on in 10 years, 15 years, let's say, based on my cash basis, the cash out of pocket, then your dividend goes up to 10%, 15%, 20%. Just like that stock did that I purchased in Cyprus, based on reading a newsletter from Doug Casey, that it was paying a 10% dividend, and then it kept gradually increasing its dividend to now, based on what I paid for the stock, it's at a 20% yield. So for sure, and I'm going to do my very best to try to find some investments like that from Marin Katusa's newsletter. And, you know, if I find something that I'm investing in, I'll absolutely 100% let you guys know for sure. Ukmar asks, been MIA, missing in action a while. Okay, well, thanks for coming back, Ukmar. It's good to have you back on the live stream. What are your thoughts on climate change? Bigger threat than the financial system? See any correlation between the two? Climate change, in all honesty, is not something that I have studied that much of. It just hasn't piqued my interest. And I'm not saying that I shouldn't study it. I'm not saying that it isn't a big deal. You know, when climate change first started coming into the mainstream narrative, this was back when I was maybe in the 90s or maybe, I don't know, maybe early 2000s, something like that. That's when I remember it coming into the mainstream narrative. My position was simply, I mean, does it really matter about global warming? Because I just don't like shitty air. So my big thing was, well, okay, even if it's not global warming, I just like clean air. I don't like breathing smog. So, but not that global warming doesn't matter, but you see what I'm saying. I looked at it just from a standpoint of just liking to not breathe fumes and, you know, all this smog that you see in LA. Or at the time, I remember I was in Phoenix. And I remember having that thought when I was hiking Squaw Peak that isn't just clean air good enough reason to want clean air? But anyway, so there's so much of a debate. It's a man-made. The problem with it is that even if there is climate change, the solution to climate change could be just as catastrophic as climate change itself. There's just a lot of it's just such a lot of moving parts there. But to give you, I don't have enough education to give you a specific opinion on it, other than I think it's a really big deal from an economic standpoint, because even if climate change is not, isn't going to have a dramatic impact on nature, I think it will have a big impact on the economy because of the political shift and the political narrative is going to change. And I think taxes are going to increase dramatically. Whether in my opinion, the politicians don't care about climate change, whether they say they do or they don't, they just want a tax grab. And so I think that's where it's really going to play into your pocketbook. But as far as it having a dramatic impact in the next 10 years from the standpoint of climate change itself, I don't see that. I don't see it happening, but it's not to say that it's not an important issue. I think that's the takeaway. Question, Acrobat Mapping asks, did you see Gundlach's article on copper-gold ratio? And since copper is plummeting, do you think that Powell will need to cut rates faster to keep the 10-year above the 2-year? In other words, to keep the yield curve from inverting. I have not read Gundlach's report. I will definitely do that when I get some time this week because I'm really super interested in that. I think that's an awesome topic for a video. And anything that Gundlach puts out, I'm going to want to read that because I've got a lot of respect in his opinion. I think Powell will need to cut rates for a lot of reasons. An inverted yield curve is definitely one of them. But I know this sounds crazy, but I think the government, more specifically, the Treasury Department, can force the Fed to lower interest rates if they want, for political reasons, for whatever reasons. So I think that because it's an election year and they know that the government and Trump knows that the market's basically a proxy on his popularity, they're going to do everything they can to juice the market. And that means lowering the interest rates, getting the yield curve to steepen. And that means lower interest rates. And Powell, I don't think, is going to have a choice. In fact, he doesn't have a choice because the way things have been set up since 2008, it's really important you guys understand this. Back in 2008, the entire monetary system changed 100%. Totally totally was a completely new system. And one of the things that they did is the Treasury had started to sell more short-term debt so the Fed could buy it to take reserves off of the balance sheets of the primary dealers. And I know that gets really confusing, but I'm trying to think of a way to say that. Basically, the Fed needed to take reserves away from the banks without decreasing the money supply, and they needed to inject more liquidity at the long end of the yield curve. And the only way they could do that without creating a lot more problems than that would solve is if the Treasury printed T-bills, short-term debt, so the Fed could buy it. And then who are they buying it from? Who's buying that debt? The primary dealers. That goes into goes from their reserve accounts to the Treasury general account, which is, by the way, with the Fed. So then that takes those reserves out of the system and replaces them with reserves at a different point in the yield curve. So going back to my original point was, I think rates are going lower for a lot of reasons. And definitely getting rid of the inverted yield curve or flat yield curve is one of them. Okay, LA Klinky asks, are bonds within the permanent portfolio still a good asset? Should they be replaced by commodities or real estate? Thank you very much, George. It starts by asking the question, is it cheap or is it expensive? Again, you guys are starting from the wrong point, or you're starting with the wrong question. And I really want to encourage you guys to start with a different question. Instead of starting with the question of, is it going to go up in price or down in price? Start with the question, is it cheap or is it expensive? So bonds right now, in my opinion, and I think it's pretty obvious, are extremely expensive. So that said, unless it's a speculation. Now, if this is strictly a speculation, that's a different story. But if this is an investment, then you should be selling what's expensive and looking for something like real estate that is, meaning the cash flow from real estate, that is cheaper, or hopefully cheap, period. As far as commodities, if you've got the bonds in the speculation part of your portfolio and you want to swap them for commodities, then I think that could probably be a good idea, because you're trading one asset that's extremely expensive for another asset that's extremely cheap. But neither of those assets pay you to own them. So we want to make sure they're in that bucket of our portfolio, and we're thinking of them exclusively that way. Because when people start conflating the portions of their portfolio, that's when they get really confused and they start making bad decisions, in my opinion. Arian asks, hi, Mr. Gammon. I wanted to know, what should young people do before going into university and dealing with real world financial issues? Do you recommend an education that helped you? I don't know if you want to go to university, Arian. I think it's way overrated. I don't see any reason to do it unless you're trying to be a doctor or a lawyer or something that's specialized like that. Then absolutely, you want to go to university. Maybe computer science, something like engineering. But other than that, like, I went to college for communications. It was just ridiculous. It did nothing. To be quite honest with you, and I don't want to discourage people that might be going to college for the right reasons, but if you look at what I've done in my life as far from a financial standpoint, you know, I was a self-made millionaire at the age of 34. I retired at the age of 38 in 2012. Throughout my business career and my entrepreneurial career, I didn't use one thing that I learned past maybe third grade. I mean, just basic math. You got to know how to read. And that's about it. As long as you got that, you can make a lot of money. You just got to have some other things that they don't teach you in school. And it's not that money should be your only goal, but for most young people, that they definitely use that to guide their decision-making process on whether or not to go to college. But if it's just making money and doing something you love is your main goal, I think going to college is not a good play, unless you're going to be a doctor, lawyer, engineer, something like that. And the best financial advice I can give you right now, Arian, is to get into, even if you're going to college, try to find a gig in the field where you want to work or where you want to be an entrepreneur, where you want to start your own business, and just work for free, or work cheap, do something, even if it's nights, whatever, just so you can get in there and learn skills and understand that business. And then when you get out on your own, you can use that industry knowledge to parlay that into a really awesome job or maybe into your own company. And that there's no better place to learn at a very low cost than an actual job. You don't have all the startup capital. You have a guaranteed paycheck. So for a young person. And then the other thing that I would say, if at all possible, Arian, try to house hack. It will be the best financial decision you will ever make in your life. As a young guy or gal, you go out there, you buy a triplex or a fourplex, and you know the story. I say it all the time. You live in a unit, you get your tenants to pay your mortgage, and then that money that you would have spent on housing, take that, save it, and use it to start your own business or use it to invest. And if you do that well over 30 years, that's your retirement plan. You're done. You have nothing to worry about. You don't have to worry about Social Security or any government pension wherever you live. You are complete in control of your retirement destiny. Okay, Conrad asks, the VA home loan has no cap. Yeah, nothing down, right. So I'm looking at getting into fourplex, California. I also get property taxes waived due to disability. Well, in that case, yeah, for sure, Conrad. If you can, it doesn't really matter where it is. I'm down on California so much because that overall, it's a terrible place to invest. But if you can make the numbers work because of whatever benefits you have, then by all means, if you can get a 1% RV ratio, or if you can get the equivalent in net because you're not paying property taxes, then and it's cash flow positive, I'd say go for it for sure. It's just all about the numbers. But you, another thing you have to weigh into that, Conrad, though, is you've got a lot of headwind in the state of California from a standpoint of property taxes and a lot of other things. So rent control, another one. So you've got to weigh that into your decision-making process. But from what you've just told me right here in the quick little text, it looks like it's something you should explore. Baxter, thank you for the super chat. Says, thoughts on taking out a mortgage and investing in Tesla call? Come on. No. What are you talking about? I don't know if that's a serious question or not. You might be trolling me, Baxter. If you are, good job. But just in case you're not, let me answer that. Thoughts on taking out a mortgage, I'm assuming like taking home equity out of your house and investing it on Tesla calls to expire next month. No. That's a total speculation. And you don't want to take out your equity. You don't want to take part of your portfolio that's allocated to an investment and turn it into a speculation. That's not a good move. Just if you want to take out your mortgage or take out equity, make sure you're buying something that's an actual investment that pays you to own it, not speculating on Tesla calls. Cody, thank you for the super chat. I see that silver might be a good speculative investment and am looking in partnering up with a colleague on a rental property. Any advice? Number one, I think you're right about silver. I think especially the silver miners, if you know how to pick them, it goes back to picking them right. And I'm personally going to try to divert some of my capital, especially when I sell a couple of these real estate projects, into having more of my portfolio allocated to speculation. And I'm seriously considering buying some of the silver miners. And I will do that kind of using Marin's advice, Marin Katusa, from that newsletter that I subscribe to. So if I do that, I'll definitely let you guys know. As far as partnering up with a colleague on a rental property, it depends on who the colleague is and how well you know him or her. You got to remember, whenever you're getting into a business partnership with anyone, you're basically marrying that person. And 50% of marriages end in divorce, right? I would say fewer business partnerships work out than actual marriages. So I've been very fortunate that I for most of my what I've done in business or in investing, I have had no partners. And when I did have partners, they were incredible. The guys, they were amazing. So, but I know I've been very lucky in that. So if you can possibly do the rental property thing without a partner, I'd suggest that. If you've got to take on a partner, make sure that there's someone that you don't mind being married to from a standpoint of business. And you really have to see eye to eye with that person as far as how you, just your personality, the way you look at business, the way you look at money, the way you look at growth. It's just, there's a lot of things there that have to be lined up. So, and I would strongly discourage partnering with a family member or a friend, because, and this goes for hiring them as well. I always was very reluctant to hire family members or friends, because I had a philosophy that I never wanted to hire someone I couldn't fire. And if you let that sink in for a while, I think it'll make sense. My point is that you never want to be held hostage by one of your employees that isn't pulling their own weight, in the sense that you cannot fire them because you risk losing the relationship, the personal relationship that you have with that person. And you don't want to be in that position. So you always want to be in the position as an employer where you can get rid of someone who just isn't pulling their own weight. I got a great place to leave it, guys. I really appreciate everyone on the live stream. As a final reminder, guys, go to the website and put your email address in there. Get on that email list so I am sending you those videos directly. I'm giving you my personal commentary that's exclusive. You're going to get exclusive content. The benefit to both of us is it allows me to have more control over the distribution of my content. And because of what's going on with all the social media platforms, as we know, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get as many people from the YouTube channel over to the email list, so I always have control over my videos going to the people that want to watch those videos or that content.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.